Matt, are you up and running?
And we're good.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone. It is 10:31 a.m. on Thursday, May 21st, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Krasius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman. This is a work session on case numbers PU-19-306, an advanced determination of prudence for HESCA 4, PU-19-307, which is a public convenience and necessity for HESCA 4 as well, and PU-19-317, deferred accounting for Lewis and Clark 1 and HESCA 1 and 2. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchek?
I don't have any opening comments either. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman?
Nor do I, thanks.
Okay, perfect. And I'm on the verge of sneezing, so we'll... Well, I think it may have passed, so if not, everybody cover their ears. The one thing I wanted to discuss, and this could wind up being a very short work session, or maybe it will go a little bit longer, but hang on just one second. Okay, I was even able to get to the mute part, so I love my allergies in the spring. The one thing I have looked at is related to the deferred accounting. What a bad time to get the sneezes. So right now there are two components in terms of the deferred accounting. One is for $4.4 million in employee costs, and that would be spread out over 5 years. That's to relocate or to train. Some of them would be involved in decommissioning if this is approved. So there's $4.4 million in employee costs. That's over a five-year period. There's $65.6 million, I believe, in... that would be amortized over 15 years for the plants themselves. And, you know, thinking about how we have done this with the production tax credits and trying to balance things out so the ratepayers that benefit from the facilities, it's more closely matched up to them. And in the 15-year period, that's an extended length of time, obviously, and meaning ratepayers over the next 15 years would be picking up the cost of facilities that they may or may not have received benefit from. Again, this is all if this is approved. And the thought is, and Pat, you're probably going to have to help me out to make sure I get this stated correctly, but I'll give it a try. If, and this is I'm just going to put this number out as a comparison. I don't know that this is the number, but if, to be more consistent in terms of how the PTCs were handled, for example, we would actually shorten the length of time that the 65.6 million is recovered. And let's just say it were a 10-year period instead of 15, that would tie closer to the current generation of ratepayers versus a future ratepayer that may not even be a customer of MDUs right now. They may buy a house in the area in 5 years in MDU's territory and then still have 5 years of depreciation to help cover versus 15 or 10, I guess. It were 5 years out based on an initial period of 15 years. So had some conversation with Pat on this and The big question for me is, should we be looking at speeding up or shortening the amortization period that the undepreciated amount is amortized over, and matching it up more closely, perhaps with anticipated energy savings, which in effect would hold customers harmless between now and, you know, over the course of that time, if it were more closely aligned. And I just wanted to get, Pat, do you want to weigh in next, or not weigh in necessarily is a good way of stating it, but do you want to see if I'm on the right track with how I described it?
Ryan, before Pat speaks, could I ask you to repeat the figures for the amounts of amortization that you were quoting? That there's two components.
Right. There are two components, and I want to clarify. I believe MDU is looking for $68.7 million, and I believe, you know, staff is right around $70 million. So I'm, you know, it's very close, but out of the $70 million, $4.4 million is for employee costs. And then the remaining portion would be $65.6 million would be the amount that would be amortized over whichever period it winds up being. So the employee cost is over a 5-year period. Plant costs are over a 15-year period, the undepreciated amount of the plant side.
Thank you. Okay, sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Pat, did I describe everything correctly so far, or generally speaking?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. The idea was, I guess, you know, at the hearing, there was testimony regarding savings to the customers with this, with the bringing Heskett 4 online and decommissioning the other coal plants. The to the extent that there are savings, perhaps the if there are savings other than fuel cost savings, because certainly the customers will realize fuel cost savings right as they pass through the fuel costs through the fuel clause adjustment. But if there are savings other than fuel cost savings, perhaps that would be a way to shorten the amortization period and more closely match the cost to the existing customers, or the customers that got the benefit from the plants that are being decommissioned.
And Pat, is there a way to, I know there are quite a few numbers involved, significant number of calculations, but is there a way, do you think, to just at least be closer, maybe not to the exact, certainly not to the exact day or month, but, you know, to be closer in terms of the operation and maintenance costs, well, the savings on that side by converting to natural gas instead of running the coal plants, the emissions requirements, the equipment that would have to be added to keep them running in the future. And so there's a net savings in terms of converting to Heskett 4, constructing Heskett 4 versus operating Lewis and Clark 1 and Heskett 1 and 2. So the question, I guess, is there is a way to be more precise, if you will. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know how precise we can be. Even, you know, rate making isn't truly exactly precise, but I think we could, perhaps if the commissioners were interested in this, we should explore the savings to customers in this transition here and try to quantify that and see if the amortization period could be shortened in an amount that would offset or equal the savings. and we don't have those numbers. I don't have those numbers. I am not absolutely sure if those numbers are in the record even. And so it might involve asking the company for more information. If the commissioners are interested in this concept.
Okay, and that really was the purpose. And as I mentioned at the beginning, it could end up being a very short work session if there isn't an appetite for that, or we could have further discussion. So why don't we, I would be interested in trying to match it up more closely. It's not a deal breaker for me if it's not, but I would be interested in exploring that because, again, I think it's more consistent from how we looked at handling the PTCs with those facilities that are coming online or are online. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any thoughts? Start with you.
I have some questions. I'm interested in it. I think it's an interesting concept. So just to make sure I'm understanding the concept correctly, what we'd be looking at is savings in capital costs and O&M perhaps. What are those? And then see how that might be used to defer the or offset the $65.6 million of undepreciated asset. Is that the concept for either you or for Pat?
I would say yes. Pat?
Yes, I would say that is correct. The company identified savings, staff identified savings. We just would need to determine how much of that is. We'd have to take the cost, the savings from fuel cost out of the amount that staff and company identified and see if there's any left that could be used to offset the amortization.
Okay.
I'd be interested in seeing that.
Commissioner Chrisman?
A couple questions. Isn't there more to the question than that, though? It isn't a lot of the question about shortening the time from 15 years to a shorter time period, which would decrease the ROE and save the ratepayers money? Is that, I thought that was really the main point.
This is Pat. Yes, that is. When I said offset amortization, really that's, it takes into account everything that you mentioned as well, Commissioner Chrisman.
Okay, and then a second question. When we talk about this roughly 68 to 70 million and look at MDU 7, which was the late filed exhibit with a bunch of these plant costs on, which numbers off these pages do I use to get to 68 to 70 million or to 65 million because the employee costs aren't on here? So,
well, the numbers that I found were in the company's application in the deferred accounting, request for deferred accounting. And the numbers that were provided by the company there came to 70 million in total for the impact to North Dakota. And 4.4 million of that was the employee costs that was going to be amortized over 5 years. And 65.6 million left would be amortized over 15 years. Okay, and then, I don't have a way to pull that up right now.
Okay, and the third question is, am I right in recalling that Mr. Heidel actually had recommended a shorter time than 15 years?
Uh, If that question is for me, I don't recall that.
Okay, then I'm gonna have one more comment on the deferred accounting aspect of this, but Mr. Chairman, as far as exploring the potential savings and such for a shorter time frame, I would be in full agreement to look at that a little more carefully, because I did make a note that the company and advocacy, at least according to my notes, were both in agreement to, you know, further explore a shorter time frame if we felt that was useful. So I would certainly be in support of that idea.
Okay, then. With that,
could I add one more thing on deferred accounting?
Yes, absolutely.
And this is sort of one of my questions for Patrick that I would have asked before the work session. When I look at some of the plant costs that were added within the last 5 years, I'm not saying that I support denying certain things, but there are some that I need more explanation of before I feel comfortable allowing them. And so am I right in understanding the deferred accounting, we're just kind of having them keep track of these expenses, and the question of whether certain things should potentially be denied or partially denied is really appropriate for the future rate case, not for this case?
This is John Hsu. This is an accounting, essentially does set up accounting so they can possibly get recovery of this in the future. It does say in the settlement that they may request that through a generation rider, but if they didn't do a request through the rider, they would then have to come forward in a rate case to request the cost recovery and approval of those costs at that time.
But in either event, whether it be through the rider or in the rate case, we will get a shot at making a decision on whether it's appropriate or not, correct?
Yes, at that point in time, we will have the opportunity to review the costs.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Commissioner Christman, are you thinking of any items in particular? Would it be the dump truck, for example?
Well, there's smaller amounts, yet cumulatively over $1 million. When you look at deciding to close a plant or a couple plants and then replace all your dump trucks and payloaders, I guess I want to learn about that. But even some of the bigger things, the environmental controls and pond work and such, they go back a little further. Maybe they were necessary well before there was this much contemplation into closing these facilities. But it seems like a lot of money was poured into these plants within a very short time frame before a decision was made to close them. And it concerns me, and I'm gonna want to know more about how they arrived at the decisions to do these things.
I agree with that. It caught my eye too, and I'm just trying to pull it up, but from 2015 to 2018, or even into 2019, I thought it was approximately 41, 42 million. And some of the things, you know, I had mentioned the dump truck, for example, the wheel loader, the backhoe. Now there's still value in those assets. And if they're not necessary anymore because of the facility change, if it's approved, I would expect that they would be sold. And hopefully a decent amount would be recovered through the sale of those items, because I don't know that you need a wheel loader to operate a gas plant, but I've never operated a gas plant either. So. And that's a good point you bring up.
It also, Mr. Chairman, could be that some of these things are going to be used more than ever in the time during the decommissioning too. I don't know if, and do you, just what all they're going to do themselves and what all will be contractor work. But anyway, it sounds like that's a decision for another time. So I just wanted to clarify that we're not committing to all these things in advance.
So Jack, you had weighed in on that, and you said, just to reinforce what you said and what Commissioner Christman just said, during the next rate case, we would be able to review those components and make a determination at that point in time?
It would be in a future rate proceeding, whether it's a rate case or a possible rider hearing or review. I would note that the amortization really shouldn't come into play, if my understanding is correct, until the point where we approve those costs. And so if the commission was interested in continuing to review the amortization periods, we could modify the settlement so that we could review those at the time of when they request the actual cost recovery of the deferred costs in the future.
Okay. All right, thank you. Commissioner Fedorchuk or Commissioner Christman, did you have any other questions related to this?
Just a follow-up to what Jack just said. So do you think that's a preferred route to just go ahead with the existing amortization years with the caveat that they can be changed, or do you think that we should change that right now, Jack, before any approval is made?
Sure, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think regardless of whether you guys are looking at reviewing it now or reviewing it later, a modification of the settlement agreement would be needed. So we can just as well look at those amortization periods now, or we could look at it in the future when they actually come forward with a rider proceeding or through a rate case as well. But either way, you would probably need to modify the settlement agreement to that extent.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
So Pat, you had mentioned even on, during the call, but also in the conversation we had previously, that you would have to go back to the customer, to the company, and get more information from them. I don't want this to drag out forever, but do you have any sense of how long it would take to put something together that, again, this is not going to be exact, I understand that, and it never is, but to have a better, to be able to match it up, at least in what we think would be more closely tied to the savings of the new facility?
I would certainly need to, if we need information from the company, I would need to contact them. And I would hope that they could turn a response back to us fairly quickly, but I don't know what their workload is, what their schedules are like. I could contact them very soon and get an estimate on that, or maybe some more information that could change the whole concept.
Right. To me, that makes the most sense, doing that as a next step, so we actually have an approximate time frame in mind. And I know it's doable, but I also realize that it takes some time to put these numbers together. But if it's a reasonable amount of time, then I would like to get the numbers and then go from there and make a determination once we have something tangible to actually look at.
This is Jack, and we've done this in the past in other proceedings, and generally hasn't taken more than a couple weeks. But of course, we'd still follow up with the company to make sure that would be feasible.
Okay. Well, for this component, I think that would be the next step to follow up with the company or Pat, however you and Jack, however you two would like to proceed, and then gather the information, and then we can take a look at it and decide if it's still worthy of pursuing, or if it's more closely matched than I think it is. But 15 years again, just for myself, that was the one thing that really, and it's consistent with conversations, I believe, that we've had at the commission in terms of just rate fairness and who pays for facilities, which generation of ratepayer. So that was my primary today.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Crispin.
Could I just interrupt you there? Just one small detail. I kind of agree with just where you went there, except for I think it's should be emphasized, Patrick, to be following up not only with MDU but advocacy staff as well. They also agreed with the time frame here, and maybe they'll have some particular reason why not to deviate from that. And so I just want to emphasize that we follow up with both.
Gotcha.
Agreed. I agree. Okay, that's again, that was the purpose why I wanted to have a work session on this to discuss this particular point. I don't have anything else related to the three cases. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have anything else?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Crispin, anything else that you would like to discuss on the cases?
Well, I'll throw out one more thing, and someone can just help put me over the top on the ultimate decision here of granting the ADP and the gas plant. Based on testimony, it almost sounds like maybe the best reason for doing it is just to occupy their access to MISO. They're not even planning on, I was thought going into the case until I really started researching it, and then even I thought I first misunderstood it. I thought the plan would be to have it built so it become operational at approximately the same time that the coal plants cease operations, especially Heskett being the larger of the however you want to count it, two or three. You know, maybe not immediately operational, but like if the coal plant's going to end in the spring with the end of the winter cycle, that the gas plant would be expected to be operational by summer peak times. But they don't really seem to have any strong need for the generation, planning on not even to have it operational for a full year, full hot cycle and a full cold cycle without either one of them operational. So kind of makes me wonder really how important this is, or is this just a matter of, well, being able to hold on to the interconnection and put another band-aid on to further kick the can down the road on the need for any more baseload power. And as I suppose, as long as we keep band-aiding our generation system together, we'll do without baseload power until we run into trouble over that. And then we'll probably, and I don't say we as North Dakota or MDU, but I mean nationally, we'll suddenly realize how much baseload we've lost. But I guess I've kind of rambled on enough. I'm still not 100% convinced that this is even necessary.
Okay, that relates to the ADP and the PCN for Heskett 4?
Right.
Are you looking at that as a separate issue from retiring the plants, or?
Yes.
Because it's been demonstrated in terms of continuing to operate Lewis and Clark 1, Heskett 1 and 2, that if nothing else on the open market purchases would be less than continuing to operate the plants. They're just in a tough spot right now with having to add emissions control equipment and other things in order to keep them operational. And then, is it a good long-term investment given the fact that they're smaller plants in terms of size, which makes it challenging to begin with. So,
yeah, I agree. I think it's a foregone conclusion that those facilities have served their purpose and it would be very expensive to maintain yet long term. But since Heskett 4 isn't needed for a full year after those are all inoperable, I'm not sure it's needed at all.
Pat, was this to hold the interconnect, because they have, is it a 12-month period window that they have to make that switch? Or is it longer than that to be able to obtain the interconnect? Or actually, Commissioner Christman, Commissioner Fedorchak, you two are more closely connected to MISO and SPP. Does someone have an answer on what that window of time is? I thought it was mentioned, and I forgot what it was.
I think it's shorter than that, where they have to actually have their plans submitted to what they're doing to hold it. I think it's 6 months, but I can't recall. I wouldn't, you know, become comfortable saying that with a lot of confidence. I will say just, you know, I think Randy has raised some good points and asked a lot of great questions during the hearing on these kinds of issues. From my perspective on the need question, I'm looking pretty regularly at the MISO market and retirements and seeing a lot of the dispatchable resources going away. So I appreciate our utilities having some of their own in place, especially right here in Bismarck, in the center of their service territory. So I think it's really valuable for that reason, for the interconnection reason, the valuable piece, and the flexibility that it allows to be converted to a combined cycle down the road. So, I mean, I think the discussion during the hearing was very productive, and I felt comfortable that it's a smart decision to make this, to move forward with Heskett 4 at this time. And it would be one that I think we could look at with regret down the road as the capacity shrinks in the markets and everybody's turning to purchase that. I think that capacity could get really expensive quickly and be a burden to the ratepayers. So I agree with the advocacy staff that this is a prudent investment for our ratepayers.
Just scribbling some notes. All right.
If I could ask a question, but just give me a moment to find the setup to it. So the cost that I wrote down in my notes of transitioning Heskett 4 someday into a combined cycle plant would be about $200 million. So $200 million plus the initial construction cost. The number I kind of wish I had was, so how much cheaper would it be to just build a combined cycle now as opposed to a peaking plant and then the transition costs? If the total is pretty similar, I would feel a lot better about this than if it was substantially more to build one and then transition it.
Commissioner Fedorchak, if you're speaking, I can't hear you.
Sorry. I thought I tapped it, but it didn't register. My only, and that would be a good question for staff, but my only comparison would be that combined cycle that we looked at in Mankato, I think was about 600 million. And so, and I thought Darcy talked pretty extensively about this at the end. I'd have to review the transcript to get the exact figures, but my sense walking away, subject to misunderstanding, was that it was similar, you know, that you weren't wasting a bunch of money on a simple cycle and then having to redo a bunch of stuff and invest more to get the combined cycle, if that's what your ultimate goal is.
And
plus, at this time where, I'm sorry, one last thought on that. At this time where, you know, the technologies, quite honestly, they're changing quite a lot regularly, you know, and 4 years down the road, maybe the combined cycle won't be the way to go. Maybe it will be more of peakers with, you know, which can ramp really quickly and fill in for the renewables with and batteries or whatever is this. I just think it's having the flexibility is a premium right now with so many technological changes impacting the decisions and the operations of the grid so significantly. So I think that, I mean, that might also weigh to your point of just resting on the market, but I think we have an obligation to do our part to make sure that our companies are investing in resources that they can dispatch and count on for their ratepayers and not just leaning heavily on the market alone. So I think there's a combination here that I find to be an appropriate balance.
I would agree. As more and, you know, we're seeing more retirements, coal-fired retirements across the country, and at some point something will have to give. And I think it's going to happen sooner versus later. So I do worry about available capacity as well. And I do question some of the projections that we see in terms of what open market purchase costs will be in the future. And I think they're understated. I think they're going to, invariably, I think they're going to jump. I don't know how they can't. The economics just don't support the fact that they won't increase unless there's just a massive influx of gas generation to offset the loss of coal-fired generation across the country. It's happening in quite a number of places. And you bring up a good point, Commissioner. But Arch, how do we protect our customer base in North Dakota? So. But Commissioner Christman, I think it's an excellent question, and I do recall that being discussed at the informal. But I would have to pull my notes to go back and verify that. In fact, we have some tangible numbers to work from, or work with, I should say.
Yeah, and my just recollection, although I didn't make good notes of it, so that's just what I want to confirm yet. I got the impression that the transition costs wouldn't likely be all that extreme. And so there was the likelihood for it to transition, because when we talk about protecting our customers, I mean, one of the things that we don't want long term is to have nothing but peaking plants that then end up running as if they were baseload plants, because they're not very efficient. It's going to be a high cost of electricity for the consumers. But I had the impression, I just don't have good enough notes on it. So I just want to follow up on that. I'm guessing that I'm going to be fine on the ADP. But like I say, I just want to work with staff a little more on it.
As long as we have Jack and Pat and I think Victor, even you could weigh in without offering an opinion, if you have just a number. Any of the three of you have a number in terms of what the price differential would be and why it makes sense to not just build it now? Jack, I see you lit up on your speaker.
Right, I did. Jerry Lean, I think, is on the line as well, and he was the analyst in the case. So I would probably defer to him on this one. I don't have it offhand, but we could follow up with that pretty quickly, I believe.
Okay, and I apologize. I see. Is that Jerry Lean that is on? I see a Jerry, I'm assuming it's Jerry Lean. Jerry, are you with us?
It looks like he just went offline. I'm not sure if he's having issues and trying to reconnect.
Adam, do you happen to have any numbers off the top?
I do not see Adam in here.
Oh, who is speaking? I'm sorry.
That was Matt Kluzak.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, well, this is Adam. I'd have to probably go back and review. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and review, but... And this is just a memory from a while ago, but if I kind of recall something about building a CT would allow them to use some of the equipment for a CC later on. So that could provide some cost savings, but then again, I'd have to go back and listen to it.
Okay. All right, well, we'll have to wait for those numbers then.
Yeah, and I think we'll have a little delay anyway if we're going to take at least a early look through of a shortened depreciation time. So I think we've got a little bit of time.
Mr. Chairman, one other thought, and I found my notes, but I didn't write down as much as I wished about the cost of the conversion from the combined cycle, singles and combined, but I did keep a list of the kind of the reasons in support of an ADP, and one big one that we haven't talked about yet today would be the avoidance of a new source determination down the road, so they'd have the emissions netting from this facility to the coal facility to a gas facility, which would be a positive for them if they went and had to, you know, 4 years, if they got rid of it, let it all go, and then in 4 years decided, or 2 to 4 years decided they needed a new plant, they'd be starting at ground zero and having to have an increase emissions, you know, it, as a new source, and that, you know, depending on where we're at with CO2 regulation could be challenging in other regulations as well. So that was another plus to making this conversion today.
All right. I don't have anything further, Commissioner Fedorchuk, do you, related to this?
I do not, thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
No, I'm done, thanks.
Okay, well, Pat or Jack, if anyone has anything else, or Adam or Victor, I'll give just a couple of seconds. Okay, I don't hear anything from anyone else. So this work session on PU-19-306, 307, and 317 is now concluded and adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.